today. In fact, I'm not going to talk. Two experts are going to talk about point of care testing. We were discussing before our faculty meeting began about functional medicine in general. And I was confiding, which I'm not confiding now because I'm telling everyone, I must admit that when I first heard the term functional medicine, I scratched my head a little bit. And I heard someone say, oh, the pharmacists just want to be like doctors, MDs. And I've heard other things that were not very flattering. And I considered that. And over the last year and a half, I've heard a lot more about the basis of functional medicine. And I've increased my nutrient intake. And I've developed a profound respect for concepts that physicians, MDs, DOs, for the most part, have no idea. They're not looking at things that help people. They're doing what most folks do. They give medicine, take out organs, like that. So I've become a believer. And for you students with Dr. Zimmerman, pay attention. These are two brilliant individuals who are going to give you some ideas that are possibly career changing. And we're going to begin with Suzanne Keyes. Suzanne Keyes is a pharmacy owner and from Elk City, Oklahoma. She is a renowned speaker on functional medicine, sought after. And she's going to begin the presentation. And then after that, Hillary Howell, a community pharmacy owner from Oxford, Michigan, will follow up. And anything that Suzanne hasn't covered, Hillary will fill in the blanks. And so Suzanne's got the advantage here. Hillary's got, I can't say that. Well, Suzanne already said that. I know how that goes. Speaking second isn't always the best. And behind Suzanne are some charts that she may mention one or two of them to you, and that are quite fascinating. And she will go into a little bit of detail on those. So without further ado, point of care testing, what's it all about? How do you do it? How do you make it legal? How do you sell it? How do you get paid for it? We only got 5 hours, so take your time. Actually, 50 minutes. Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you, Quentin. I'm glad you guys are joining us today. I'm going to share my screen real quick so we can start. I just put about 10 slides together just so that y'all had a visual about what we're talking about. So I'm going to go over the Dutch test, which is the dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. All of the tests that I have stocked in my pharmacy, Hillary brought up a good point, so I'm going to go ahead and talk about this one specifically. They do not require a CLIA waiver. So these are things that you can simply, you know, decide which test you want to conduct or build a consultation around, and then just contact the lab. They'll get you an account set up, and then you just kind of take it from there. Also, a lot of the test companies, the laboratories, have videos on their website to teach you how to interpret them. So I'm not going to do that today because there's so much information and so many resources that if you're interested in doing something like this, I encourage you just to go to, I think it's, I've got the link somewhere. Well, it's not going, there we go. The link is down here in the bottom, the dutchtest.com. So I'm gonna start off first. There's a couple of ways that these can be sold or purchased. I don't necessarily advertise it. The patient can pay for the Dutch test directly to, you know, from the company, because a lot of times what that does is it takes you out of the picture, and people being people will bypass you to avoid intentionally or not intentionally getting the product or getting the test. So I actually, if the patient wants to go directly to the website to buy it, these are their prices that the website, that Dutch Test will charge them. And I believe they offer with that price, maybe a 20 or 30 minute consult for the patient. And that's it. So that is an option. The other option that I do is I set up a provider account and they do provider billing. So they'll bill me the cost of the test, and I've got the pricing up, I think, two slides down. And then I can build into that my consult. So right now I have to stay around my demographic and what they will pay out. And so the Dutch Complete, for instance, I think we charge $3.99, or we have been charging $3.99. And then you'll see the profit margin in there. And then that's what I use for my consult fee. So there's lots of room to play around with the testing. I only picked these three because these are the most popular ones. Overall, the cortisol awakening response is amazing. It's separate from like an adrenal panel. So there's a lot of information on the CAR testing. Our most popular one is the Dutch Complete. And we'll go over what that all involves. The other thing that you need to think about is inventory. So when I very first started out, so this is the picture on the left is just a shelf that we have advertising some of the testing. And yes, those are little foam poop there because we do, we do gut microbiome testing through stool testing. We do pharmacogenetic testing. We do organic oat testing, a bunch of things. So before there was a platform that was reliable, we just stocked all the tests. And so we've got a closet, it's got all of the tests there, and we just sell them out of our point of sale. There, I think at two conferences ago, so probably about a year ago, there was a booth by a platform called Rupa Health. And we got an account and we have kind of started testing the water, so I can't speak a lot to that. But in essence, what it is they house all of the tests for you. And then you just go in there, create a patient, and then you pick. They have over 30 vendors, I think. So Vibrant America, Dutch, they've got ZRT, they've got Genova, Doctor's Data, Diagnostic Solutions, a whole bunch. You pick the test that you want for your patient. They take care of everything else. You just put in the patient's information. They drop ship the test kit to the patient. The patient pays Rupa. There is a way that you can build in a consultation fee. However, when a patient comes to my pharmacy, and even if I went up to $450 to include my consult, and then they compared prices with Dutch, I'm still less expensive. And that includes my consult fee. So on Rupa, it's not quite as, I don't want to say the word hidden, but it's very clear. The test costs you this much, patient, and then you're going to pay the practitioner's fee at this rate. I'm not super comfortable with that yet. So I continue still to, even though I've got an account with Rupa, I still just sell the patients the Dutch test across the counter. Here are some of the billing options with Rupa that we talked about that you can go. And I think I put there's their website right there, the link. And so I think you'll have access to all that. So these are the different paying options that they have. And here's where you can add in a custom fee. Just to give you kind of an example, here's the provider pricing. Okay. A lot of times they'll run specials on these pricing, on the pricing. I think this spring they had $100 off of provider pricing, which then allows you to either pass that savings on to the patient or you can, you know, keep it as your consultation fee. So in a Dutch test consult, I don't really charge that much. I mean, $100, maybe $120, because I'm only going over the results of that test. my consult, an hour and a half consult with me that is comprehensive, including the Dutch test and interpretation of the serum labs that I've ordered, and then kind of forming that around the patient's chronic condition that they're coming to me about, those run about $450 just for the hour and a half. Then on top of that, they will then pay. I will usually give them a break on their point of care testing. So they wouldn't pay another $400 for the test. I'd probably charge them $350, maybe even my cost. So the money is in, this isn't about the money, but it is, but the money is really in your ability to create a consultation practice. And that's what Hillary and I are trying to give you guys, some tools where you can do this. I put, just for an example, this was actually my test that I did last year. So what I didn't put on here is my test I did when I was 49. I'll be 56 this year. So almost two years ago, I did the test and it was completely different than my test that I did in 2017 at 49 years old. What was different here is, well, my cortisol and my ability to handle stress, which this is kind of what we call wired but tired. Well, previously it was wired but tired. So I was way up here. My cortisol response was up here, closer to the high range. And then it would drop just like the diurnal rhythm shows. The problem, which is still a little bit evident, is right here. From afternoon, it's supposed to kind of level off, except that in 2017, when I was under high stress, speaking all over the country, running a pharmacy, building my practice, at night, this cortisol level would rise, which was interfering with my sleep. So we're still seeing a little bit of that here, but the bad news was that this dropped significantly. In that, with your education as a functional medicine provider, it makes sense, because in those years, we had undergone enormous stress as a family, just trial after trial in the pharmacy. And so I was a little bit tired. The caveat with a Dutch test is the progesterone. Progesterone is not reflective in urine as a metabolite. It's more reflective in bile. Serum draws in this case would be a little bit more accurate. So, but on the Dutch, they do put it an average weighted result. So it's more of like an inferred result on the progesterone. Everything else is a reflection of what amount of hormone is actually in the cell or in the tissue that is causing either the side effects or, the effects of low estrogen, low testosterone. So all of my hormones kind of tanked. If you can see, you want them between these two stars. That's your normal optimal areas. The purple, as it's indicated over on this side, is actually the postmenopausal range. So kind of figures, I'm 54. Down here, you also get a picture of your DHEA. DHEA is considered your anti-aging hormone. It typically drops just yearly after 35 years old. This next slide actually takes that information on the first slide and really breaks it down into some processes. So if you're not aware, it is that certain estrogen metabolites that produce the toxicity and can damage DNA. And eventually, if it's not taken care of or not diagnosed or reported, like as in this test, then you'll have practitioners that just go off of a patient's symptoms. She's still having hot flashes. They increase the dose. That's when I step in and go, doc, I would not increase the dose just based on what she's told me and what I know of her. you should do more testing, because if you increase that testosterone or estrogen without knowing how she's metabolizing it, then you are setting her up for a poor outcome. So what this tells you, your main utility here is your three estrogens, okay? And this shows the pathways that they're going to be metabolized through. So there's a 2-hydroxy, 4-hydroxy, and a 16-hydroxy. I think that you probably accessed one of my, I think I did it for ACA. I did a conference seminar over estrogen metabolism that goes into a lot more depth than what I'm going to go into here. So this tells you the green is the better pathway, the 2-hydroxy. The blue and the red are the ones that really you have to be concerned with. So in 2017, I was metabolizing mostly down my safe pathway, and my methylation was really high. Methylation is key here because it's the methylated components that actually act as a dampening or a dampened rag over the toxic estrogen metabolites. So in this case, I got two things that are going south. I'm metabolizing down two dangerous pathways greater than I was previous, which wouldn't be as big of a concern if I was able to methylate well. Well, amongst everything else, my methylation has gone down to in the low range. When this is low, and you've metabolized down these two pathways, you get DNA changes right here. And that's where you can go into deep trouble. So the utility of this test is amazing. This is mostly what I use it for. I do use it for a little bit for the cortisol, just to confirm what the patient is telling me and to support the protocol that I'm going to put them on for adrenal fatigue. So in my case, this is my test. So I immediately started my methylated B vitamins. So those B vitamins that are methylated, and when I mean methylated, I mean you want something with methylcobalamin versus cyanocobalamin. Cyanocobalamin is actually made with a little bit of cyanide. I always think that's a cool fact. But your body doesn't know how to metabolize that cyanocobalamin. Your body is looking for the methyl group attached to the cobalamin. There's about 52% of the population that has a genetic hiccup that prevents methylation. And so you'll find these people. You can also look this up too. There's Susie Cohen, who is considered America's pharmacist. She's written a book on drug muggers. She also has really good articles on methylation and the conditions that are associated with that genetic hiccup when you can't methylate. So you'll be able to, if you familiarize yourself with that, you'll be able to recognize those patients. In those patients, you absolutely need methylated vitamins. A caveat here, you've got somebody with that genetic hiccup. If you overdose the methylation by giving them too much methylated vitamins, they can have restlessness, anxiety, almost like a PTSD reaction. So if I say that to let you know, not every supplement is correct for every patient. And there's a lot more to the story. So I hope these little informative webinars that we do kind of causes you to dig a little bit deeper. So I started my methylated vitamins again, amongst other things, to correct the estrogen metabolism. I quickly got on some DIM, which is diindolyl methane. What DIM does, two things. It helps push your estrogen metabolite to the safer pathway, but it also decreases overall circulating estrogens. So go back to that patient where the doctor doesn't know how she's metabolizing estrogen and she's having symptoms, so he increases it. I would at minimum suggest that she gets on at least 100 milligrams of DIM if the dose is really high of estrogen. And that'll help protect her. If you've got somebody who's on a very low dose of estrogen and you put DIM into their protocol, then you're going to counteract what we're trying to go for with the estrogen replacement. So calcium D-glucarate is another, calcium D-glucarate actually attacks the beta-glucuronidase. I may be getting in way too deep, so I apologize. But it also helps metabolize the estrogen into a safer form. The reason I mentioned that is because when I did my hormone test that year and I saw what was going on, I knew that because of the stress, I had gone off my whole foods diet and really face planted into some really good carbohydrates for about three to five months. So I knew my gut was not metabolizing correctly. So after I got that hormone test, I went ahead and did a stool test to see what was going on in the bacteria in my gut. And sure enough, it confirmed beta-glucuronidase. Just real briefly, beta-glucuronidase is the enzyme that uncouples the estrogen. So think of estrogen, all your estrogens being tied up in a little nice package with a bow on top, ready for excretion through phase two elimination. Beta-glucuronidase comes in there and unties the bow, opens the box, and then slings estrogen all over your body, and it is no longer prepared for phase two elimination. So it just recycles through the body, hitting all your estrogen receptors in your breast, in your uterus, everywhere. And then again, that's where we get a higher rate of breast cancer, because that estrogen, those metabolites aren't being excreted. So once I saw this, I was like, it wasn't a big surprise, but I had to start an entire gut healing protocol on myself, which I'll just let you know, they're not easy to follow, but they are very effective. So if that is the kind of thing that also interests you, this is a test from Vibrant America that you can do the same thing, contact them, go to their website, look at all their videos, and you'll get a lot of education there. But I think that is it for me. And then I think, let me stop the sharing. And then a little word about these. So I'm kind of a nerd and I love biological pathways. I love to see all the cofactors that we are missing, whether it's through poor absorption and we can't extract the nutrients that we need from our food, or if it's just from genetic hiccups. So the bottom one is my steroidogenic pathway. So I always have that when I'm discussing a patient's hormone test, so that I can kind of point to it. The top two, this one, you can't see the top of it, but this is from Roche Laboratories. And there you can go to, I think I Googled Roche metabolic pathway poster. Oh, and it looks like Linda has put that on there, the link. And so it took a couple of months to get it, but I got both the cellular and molecular processes. And then this one is my favorite. It's all the body's metabolic pathways, the large poster. It keeps going. Oh my gosh. I didn't realize it was that big. It was pretty big. So if you're a nerd like Hillary and I and all the rest, there's your link to grab yourself one.
Suzanne, thank you very much. Hillary gave me some information updates in preparing for this faculty meeting. And she said, Suzanne is one of the pioneers in functional integrative pharmacy. She is one of my mentors, and I do not use that word loosely. So quite a bit of respect between Hillary and Suzanne. Oh, I asked Suzanne, what gets you going in the morning? Why do you like to come to work? And she says, it's the one-on-one brief encounters with patients. And she pointed out that sometimes people come in looking for the magic pill. What have you got? And they leave with nothing but advice on lifestyle. And that's amazing. Thank you, Suzanne. Well, we may have time to come back for some more. Hillary, fill in the blanks. Tell us about your views on point of care testing, how it's working for you.
Okay, so I am actually going to, I'm going to be a nerd as well, and we're going to talk about a particular person that I just met with probably a month ago. And I'm going to hit on point of care testing, specifically gut testing. So the first one we're going to talk about is food intolerance testing. And the other one's going to be stool testing through Genova Labs. And we all have our favorites, and there's no right or wrong. I mean, if you go out and are part of the functional medicine forums and on Facebook and things like that, everyone's got something to say about some test. And we've just, I guess, chosen our favorite over time. My consultation practices and how I built, I guess, you know, like Suzanne said, it's not about the money, but it's about the money. I always charge my patients what I would for, as what I would pay for them cash. So for instance, this food intolerance testing costs me as a provider $385. That is what I charge the patients. Where I make profit is my consultation fees. So for instance, just to read a test, and I'm probably on the lower side of things. And just in the past year, I've raised my rates, and I'm going to, in the foreseeable future, I'll do it the same. But just to read a test, 30 minutes reading, not going to tell you how to necessarily fix it or anything. I'm going to charge the patient, I believe I'm at $75 for an hour right now. If they wanted the whole kit and caboodle with an initial consultations, that would be probably 1 to 2 hours with, as well as possibly 2 follow-ups, I'll go all the way up to $400. So I always come to the patient and say, I am here to present you with the tools that conventional medicine's not doing. So I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm just going to give you options of what you feel is best and what direction you want to go. So that's how I kind of wrap everything in. So the first test that I'm going to talk about is food intolerance testing. So I had a woman come to me in her late 80s with extreme diarrhea. Everything she ate caused diarrhea. She had been to 2 gastroenterologists. She got scoped. Everything was clear. I don't know what's wrong with you. It must be food. It was starting to affect her lifestyle. She couldn't go out to eat. She couldn't go to functions with her friends. And her personal life was just really, really sad in her books. So that's when she came to me. So she wanted and felt that she needed to do food intolerance testing first. So we did that. We utilized a company called KBMO. This is how you do it. This is kind of like the little instructions that are found in the kit that they take home and do it at their house. So again, we're messing with blood. Traditionally, we would be responsible for a CLIA waiver, but because they're sending it or doing it at home, we don't have that responsibility any longer. So they have a skin pit, or they prick their skin, bleed in 5 different spots, and then send it on through UPS. Let me go this way. They have various number of tests. And the one that I use is the test that tests about 175 things. But the categories are ranging from dairy, grains, fruits, additives, vegetables, spices, beans, miscellaneous categories, seeds, shellfish, fish. And then on the back, on the bottom, it will pick up candida and bakers and brewery yeast, as well as meats and nuts. So it's a huge comprehensive test, 176. So they have an option test, just 22 things, 132 things, and 176 things. So I always jump to the 176, to be honest. Her test came back. +4, +3, +2 reactions. What does that mean? So if they come in and say, I've already had my, I've been to the allergist, I've been tested. Well, what the allergist is testing is what's called an IgA response. So that's an immediate response. You eat shellfish and your throat closes off, that's immediate. We're testing IgG responses. This is a delayed reaction. This is like 3 to 5 days out. So her delayed reactions are navy beans, spirulina, that's what's causing the most reaction, and then dill seed, and then a little bit of whole wheat and pomegranate. The kicker is you have to dive a lot deeper than just this list. So for instance, she doesn't consume any spirulina that she knows of. So we have to go into each and every thing she eats, as well as supplements, to see if that spirulina is hidden in somewhere. So it makes you very aware of labels and reading food labels as well as supplement labels. Not in this particular case, but in a different case, we did a child. And you can do these in children over the age of 6 is what they recommend. Under the age of 6, particularly with this company, it can't pick up. Their immune system still developing, so they don't recommend it. But a child came up with coffee and hazelnut. I was like, my child doesn't consume coffee. What the heck's going on? Well, it turns out that this child loves Nutella. So it really takes investigative work, but it's a puzzle. And this is kind of why I do what I do. So what I suggested to this woman here is let's remove the +4 and +3 and +2 reactions and see if you can tell a difference. And when you do tell a difference, we kind of got to, I'm hoping that she can nail that, well, maybe the dill seed's causing systemic inflammation, or maybe the spirulina is causing rashes on her arms. So you kind of get a sense of what's going on there as well. But our goal is to remove these products for at least 4 to 6 weeks. To me, 4 to 8 weeks would even be better, the 8 month mark. And the theory being is you'd want to heal that gut and you could reintroduce it possibly, I don't know, 9 months later is usually my rule. Let me move on to the next screen. This is the second page of the report. It gives you the type of reactions or the severity of the reactions to each one of those foods. So I always tell someone, well, you may not, like for instance, her carrot came up as a little bit higher than a 1. If you still continued on this course and you did not fix the gut, then this carrot would become a 2, a number 3. And often it's the foods that you eat the most that show up on these reports, to be honest. The third page is that they'll do a gut barrier panel. So leaky gut is not a true definitive diagnosis. They can't diagnose you with leaky gut. It doesn't, the definition doesn't exist in conventional terms. They have come up with markers, gut barrier markers, such as zonulin and occludin, that they have seen correlations with leaky gut. So it's suggestive, but then it's not a definitive diagnosis. So there's a lot of studies showing this, and I think it's still developing. So it's not written in stone per se. But for hers, she had a positive candida, IgG candida. So that means it's kind of like a pass. Her body kind of remembered that. IgA would be more, you've got active candida. She could have active candida, which we'll see in a moment, but she could have active candida that's causing an immune response currently, but that came up negative. It's kind of in the past. So this just kind of gives you just a little bit of information, again, not definitive. She removed all those and she was still having bloating and issues. And she came back and it's like, something's still wrong. I'm still having some diarrhea. So then we did a GI comprehensive stool analysis through Genova Labs. Genova charges $420 for this massive panel. However, it gives you a lot of information. So as we can see, it will rate your maldigestion. It will rate inflammation in the gut, dysbiosis, metabolic imbalance, and we'll look at infection scores as well. So her in particular, she's digesting everything. We'll look at the different pages in detail in a moment, but her male digestion was good, inflammation, moderate need for support. So she had some of it in there. Dysbiosis, total wreck. So we have a lot to work with there. And then the other two were good. We did not know, and we wanted to really pinpoint to see if she had an H. pylori infection or a C. diff, because nothing was clearing up. So we'll talk about that. So that was good. The infection was clear. And this report really perplexed me so much that I called, and a lot of these companies that we have accounts with, you can call providers that work for them and have consultations. So you can have one-on-one consultation with providers regarding this particular or a particular patient. So I called them. I'm like, this does not make sense. She looks too clean for what I'm expecting. And they agreed as well. So we had to do a little bit more digging. So it gives you an idea of where to look, but on that bottom side, it will list therapeutic interventions too. So inflammation, for example, they want us to look at, well, maybe elimination diet, food sensitivity testing is recommended, which we did. You need some mucosal support, look at their zinc load, with maybe glutamine and quercetin and turmeric and omega-3s. So it gives you suggestions and areas of what you can do as well. The second page of this gives you an idea of your dysbiosis patterns. So I was really also looking for small intestinal bacteria overgrowth for her, SIBO. So this kind of directs us there. So methane dysbiosis score, she scored a little bit low on that, but that's kind of suggestive of having enough of the bad bacteria in there that it's going to produce methane that produces bloating and just gas and a lot of these small intestinal bacteria overgrowth symptoms. And then what was her inflammation associated dysbiosis looking like? So it kind of gives you an idea of where you're at in the whole scheme of things. The other section is relative commensal abundance. So there's different phylums, obviously, here. And in your gut, different phylums are associated with different disease states. So, or different statuses going on in your gut. So that Fusobacteria phylum, she's plus 25% here, but that could be because she doesn't have enough fiber. She has high diet or high fat diet. So these phylums suggest other things as well. So it gives you a little bit more direction. Here gives you a breakdown of everything they're measuring. So the first section measures digestive capacity. So pancreatic elastase, the green shaded areas is where we want to be. So she has enough pancreatic enzymes to break down her food and other things. So she's good there. Same with protein breakdown. She's breaking down her protein ideally. So that is good. They'll look at fecal fat, which are triglycerides, long chain fatty acids, which are cholesterol looking like. So it gives you an idea of what fat breakdown is. Inflammation, immunology, we were really wondering what was going on there with her. Calprotectin is coming up a little bit higher. And calprotectin is more of a inflammation marker gut-wise. It isn't as high as what we had thought, but it is neutrophil inflammation-driven inflammation. And usually people who with high calprotectin, it will differentiate between IBS and IBD. This will look at eosinophil protein X that has to do with more an immune and allergy response, which she was doing good. And same with that fecal secretory IgA, that's more of a immune and allergy response as well. So she's trending up, but not horrible. This will also be very, very high if they have a lot of gut barrier issues and the true leaky gut. And then metabolically, what is she looking like? Short chain fatty acids, they measure butyrate. That will also look at inflammation as well, but she looked good. And then Suzanne just mentioned beta-glucuronidase. Beta-glucuronidase, usually that's the only thing I look at. It's more from an estrogen standpoint. Mine was very high when I had trouble detoxifying estrogen as well. I took calcium deglucurate and it did go down. hers was fine, but I kind of expect that at her age. Then they measure the certain type of each bacteria in the phylum in between those. And without nitpicking each single one, it's very tough to get into the specifics. I don't really do. And that's when I do rely on that, that consultation with Genova Diagnostics to see if they see anything out of sorts. Her bifidobacterium here was likely high because she did take a probiotic. When they send the stool test in at home, they often suggest going off of probiotics, I think 7 to 10 days prior, and she had not. So that's why that value was high. So again, this differential, and we don't diagnose, but this did not suggest that this was any of the cause of the diarrhea that she had been experiencing. Same thing, this is just page 2, going into each one of those separate reports. Everything looked status quo there. There was low here, but that wasn't screaming her issues. This one is microbiology, and I do like this because here they look at if there is any bacteria, pathogenic bacteria that we have in the stool. So Salmonella, Shigella, Beta Strep Group B, Streptococcus, Enterococcus, Pseudomonas, none were problematic for her. So that was good. And then here we did have a culture for Candida, and that did not show up as a potential pathogen as well. So that kind of cross-correlated with that KBMO test that we were talking about and that positive Candida there. The other thing that this tests is worms and parasites. Now there's a big discussion again, and there's personal reports of Genova Diagnostics is not as specific when looking at worms and parasites as, say, GI Map, a different type. Each person has their own opinion, but we were also worried about parasites with her, and they came out non-detected. So that is good. This is another, they looked at Giardia, all the other stuff that was not detected. But here we had an opportunity to have add-on testing. We tested for H. pylori, which came back negative, and Clostridium or C. diff, that was also negative. So we're at a standpoint where what the heck do we do? And so it, silly as it is, I switched up her probiotic and I suggested fiber for her. Now fiber, she was already on Citracell, the fiber that you can get at the drugstore, the orange sugary stuff. And she was already doing that. And I'm like, let's just switch up to more profound, well-rounded, reputable supplements. So we did a fiber supplement that had insoluble and soluble fiber. And within 2 weeks of switching up that probiotic and changing up that fiber, which it worked wonders. She's very happy. She still has occasional diarrhea and a little bit of bloating, but she did find a second gastroenterologist, took this report to him. He was floored to see it. So he's happy. And then if things continue to not improve as much as she wants, then we have suggested doing the small intestinal bacteria overgrowth testing. And the good thing is I can refer that out to him and it would be covered on her Medicare. So she's very happy, and it just stems from fiber and a probiotic, which breaks my heart at how easy this could have been prevented. That is all I have on that.
Hillary, we're just about at the point where we're going to make introductions of our audience perhaps, and thank you for your amazing presentation, and also you, Suzanne. Hillary told me a short story. I may not have it exactly right, but when she was working towards her PharmD degree, she was making a presentation. I believe it was a table talk or a poster presentation. And it had something to do with functional medicine. Not quite certain what feature of functional medicine. And one of her professors came by and looked at it, analyzed it, and looked at Hillary. And if I'm quoting you correctly, Hillary, your professor said, "Are you some kind of a hippie?" And that stuck with me. I would like to say this. All of our discussions on pricing are not centered on how much you should charge. These are not suggestions on how much you should charge for services. But as we convert practices from products to services, this discussion is on how you can charge, the strategies for being compensated. So we're not attempting to price fix. We know that in the world of being paid for products, pharmacists have almost no control in the prescription area, where prices are dictated to us by Medicare Part D, insurance companies, discount cards, et cetera. So we're talking about charging for services strategies. So in our audience today, I mentioned that we had a few people. Harry Yablonsky's with us. Harry, I think you're on mute, but welcome back again. You contributed nicely to our last faculty meeting.
How you doing, guys? Sorry, I'm on the run today, so I'm just sort of catching all this good stuff while I'm flying by. But I saw Suzanne's slides there, and Suzanne, I didn't recognize a couple of bottles you popped up, but that's okay. It's good to see everybody. Great information. Thank you.
Nicely
it's price said. Point. Nicely. It was price point for my demographic. That's why I chose those.
That's all right. It's good stuff. You're awesome.
I love Orthomolecular. It's one of my. It's actually my favorite brand. And if you saw my pharmacy, you would see it.
I'm just kidding you. You're awesome. Thank you.
Philip, are you with us by audio now? We tried to reach you earlier. Not connecting with Philip. He says, sorry, no mic today. Well, we're still glad you're here, with or without a mic. Alexis, who are you and where are you?
Hi, everyone. Hi. So I'm in Massachusetts right now. I actually found out about these webinars through Ernie Gates. So,
Ernie.
Yeah. So just a little bit about me. I got my bachelor's degree in nutrition from UMass Amherst. And then my PharmD from Mass College of Pharmacy. So I've been a pharmacist for about 2 years and I work at a large independent retail store. But I do want to open my own consulting business one day. So this is just kind of, you know, the first steps, kind of getting a little exposure to what you guys do. So I'm very happy to tell me about this.
Perhaps we can count on you to participate as a panel member at a future faculty meeting.
Yeah, I would love to.
With your background as with a degree in nutrition, that could be very good. Well, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
David Zimmerman's student. What is your name?
Unmute yourself.
I'm Randa Mandazuz. I'm a student at Manchester University in Indiana, Fort Wayne. I had my bachelor degree in biomedical at Oakland University in Michigan. And right now I'm just doing, I work at Meijer. And
they don't know what Meijer is.
Oh, Meijer, it's kind of like
a regional Walmart.
Yeah, kind of like that.
Listen, you know, down in Alabama, we get your copies all the time, getting copies from you guys because of all the snowbirds that come down to enjoy the Gulf of Mexico.
There you go.
We're tuned in on that. Listen, with your background, this could be something really good for you with your biomedical background and so forth. So that's, well, welcome. We're glad you're here. And David, we hope you're doing well.
Oh, yeah. I'm still doing my nursing homes.
Yep. I assumed. Well, take good care of your student. Mm-hmm. Any questions for either Suzanne or Hillary or both?
Quentin, I wanted to add real quick, and I should have said this. when I started out consulting and building my business, I had no intention of building a consultation practice within my pharmacy. It just kind of morphed into that. But as I was learning, the trajectory went like somewhat like this. As I was learning and developing my passion for functional medicine and something more than the pill for the ill, I would just practice literally what I was learning, just repeating it to patients in my standard OBRA 90 required counseling across the counter in that 5-minute counsel. I found that as I was growing in my education, people would just stand there and listen. And if I talked for 15 minutes, they'd listen for 15 minutes. Well, then it ended up being, 20 minutes. Well, at some point, my pharmacy staff came to me and they said, "You're bottlenecking the pharmacy. We are at a dead standstill because you're out there giving away all this knowledge for free." They suggested I started charging for it. This was back in, 2013, 14. And I was like, "You don't understand pharmacy." I'm like, "Pharmacists don't get paid for their knowledge. We're the only, medical professional that does not get paid for educating people." And they were like, "You got to do something to slow this." So I started reluctantly charging $65 for a consult, not for an hour, not for 3 hours. It didn't matter. I would book off this section and they would pay $65. And if it lasted 2 hours, that's what they got. It was as I grew and as I developed, certifications and confidence in my ability, did my consultation fee go up. So, we went 65, then we went to 120. People were coming in hordes. And I was like, "I can't handle the workload." So I was like, "We're going to work smarter and not harder." We went up to $250. It barely slowed the onslaught. And today, 10 years later, now I'm very particular as to who I will consult on. There's certain non-negotiables. So you'll develop that confidence. And I think Hillary will agree. We didn't start out doing it this way. So you have to build not only your tribe of people that will come to you, but you also have to build your confidence. And I am a huge proponent for doing anything and everything to get the letters behind my name aren't important, but the education is. And so that's a $20,000 extra education that I have. And so then I'm going to reflect that in my consultation practice. So just to give y'all, put y'all at ease, you don't just come out of the gate and go, "If you want to sit down with me, these are your things." You'll develop it. Hillary probably has something to say too.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's the repetition, right? I started out not charging people. I do it for no charge for probably 2 years. And at that time, you're developing what you're going to say and your knowledge. And the more people you see, the more you learn. Same exact. And it's word of mouth. I don't market any of this. It's word of mouth. And then that's what's driving my consultation business.
Yeah. And like Hillary, a lot of times doctors are the ones who are driving our practice, because I'll ask for some certain serum labs, for instance, and I'll have practitioners that will call me on the backside and be like, "I haven't ordered that because I have no idea what to do with that serum lab if it comes back abnormal." And so like she said, word of mouth, your reputation will precede you. I don't advertise any of it as well. So
thank you guys for sharing that, because I think that'll be really helpful moving forward. Kind of with what I hope to do. So I appreciate that, hearing your experience.
Alexis, you have a lot to think about as you choose your path. It's
I do.
Exactly right. Any other questions or comments from the audience today, the faculty?
Suzanne, you got a question from Philip. For Suzanne, was the IFM certification process worth it?
100%. I had like I said, I kind of, like Hillary, those first probably 18 months, I struggled a lot because I didn't know that there was organizations out there like IFM. The two main players are IFM, the Institute for Functional Medicine, and A4M, so the American American Anti-Aging, College of American Anti-Aging. I had taken a few courses, attended one or two seminars from A4M. I didn't feel like it was applicable to practice in general. Neither, I will say, are designed for pharmacists. So to put it in context, I was the seventh pharmacist that actually got certified through IFM out of, I think now they have 6,000 certified practitioners. The last probably 3-4 years, a colleague and I had worked very hard and long hours to kind of publicize why pharmacists need to get out from behind the bench and start doing things like this and getting engaged in root cause medicine. And so it's now turned into this worldwide organization. IFM is now got, for years we were considered in the other group. Like if they put like, this is how many MDs and nurse practitioners, and then we were put in the other. And now we actually have a category with IFM. And so they're employing one of my colleagues actually to actually speak at the conferences. So I kind of have stepped away from conference speaking. So I was just rooting her on. But yes, IFM was definitely worth it. They are still not formatting their modules to be easily adaptable in a pharmacy. So back when I did it, I knew that I could take that information and use it in my pharmacy. And I've never looked back. I've never regretted it. And so today, there's just even more hope for pharmacists in organizations like that. So
thank you, I'm in the middle of doing my certification. And the good thing about that is you're never pressed for time. You can do it on, you know, at your leisure. So I think 3 modules in, I'm halfway done. But it's becoming even more, they're gearing it more and more towards pharmacists. I just wish we could get CEs for that. It's coming. but it's, I think it's worth it personally as well.
Thank you all both. And thank Linda, Kathy, we thank you for sending out the announcements, coordinating everything, getting our Zoom meetings together. This was one of the, every time we have a meeting, I say it's the best one. I guess they just get better every time. And this was very mind expanding. I did notice that Suzanne used the term root cause medicine. That's just so self-explanatory. I love that. Thank you all. Have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, Quentin.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.